Hello, Mixed Nutcases. This episode was recorded before Balticon, so you may hear us talk about Balticon coming up, but that has already happened. So if you are unable to, I believe we referenced the This Kaiju Life Live panel, you can listen to that on This Kaiju Life's own podcast feed. I will put the promo at the end of the episode, but do not worry, just because it was recorded before Balticon, you're not going to miss out on anything. We just talk about that it's coming up. Please enjoy.
So it does take time to do these things. Well, you can wave your hands all around and see what happens.
My name is Marnin. You've just been listening to my theremin, but now you're listening to Nutty Bites.
Give me the keys, you fuzzy sock sucker.
All right. I'm about to do the intro. Hello, Mixed Nutcases. This is Nuke Joss, and welcome to another episode of Nutty Bites. Today, we're going to be talking about positive masculinity, because a few months back, or maybe many months back, we talked about toxic masculinity. So I thought it would be good to bring that crew back and have a discussion about positive masculinity and positive examples of masculinity. And so with me today, as always, we have...
Hi, I'm Sir Tech. No, I mean, hi, I'm Tech.
And my often co-hosts from the Talk Nerdy to Me podcast.
I'm Jen.
And I'm Jason.
I'm Greg.
And lastly, we have returned from that other episode, Greg Larson. Thank you for joining us, Greg.
Thank you for having me.
So the thing that prompted this, well, there were a couple of things, but one of the things that I thought was really neat is I have heard that there is this thing called the Rogers Rule. Oh. And the rule is if Steve or Fred Rogers wouldn't do it, neither should you.
Okay.
And that these are both really positive examples of masculinity and how to be a man. And it's kind of hard to pick holes in that for me.
I think Fred Rogers is a really good example. I wish I was just a fraction of the type of patience that man had. Not only that, but his memory. He could remember people that he had like met only once, like 3 years ago, where I go to conventions and I meet tons of people and I don't know who they are. I'll recognize a face, but I won't remember their name. And now that I'm dating again, I have to introduce them to my new girlfriend. It's like, this is just my girlfriend or whatever. It's like, I'd like to introduce you to Candy, but now we've been dating a year and I've gotten a few like, you introduced me to her last time. Like, of course. Yes.
Plus with the whole introductions, you can't do a, hey, you.
Ooh, yeah. There's that guy.
How you doing, slugger?
That's right.
It's Candy. This is my friend.
This is my friend. I'll let her introduce you to herself to you. You know, I've done a few of those. And it's not because people are unimportant. It's just that I have really poor memory, and I feel very bad about that.
I completely understand that, because I kind of feel like Dr. Sam Beckett sometimes with a whole Swiss cheese brain, because either I remember the name or I remember the face, but they don't always go together.
Yeah.
I do stuff like, hey, don't I know you? I think I've seen you somewhere before. Like, I do that all the time. I do it all the time.
You know, it's really bad when they're like, yeah, up in your bedroom last night.
Oh, never had that happen.
The problem is that like I used to be president of KatsuCon Entertainment, and you would get a lot of people that would schmooze you, and part of the one of the games that they play is they pretend they know you. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, this is my best friend, Greg. Now I have to figure out whether they're schmoozing me and I have no idea who they are, or I met them and I don't remember who they are. And when my late wife, Christine, was next to me, she was my CNN scrawl. Like, at some quiet moment, she would whisper into my ear, that's Jason. You met him 3 years ago at a panel, and he has two kids named Devin and Bryce, and one of them has cerebral palsy. So make sure that you're very kind and ask how he's doing. You know, things like that. And I'm like, oh, thank God, Christine. And sadly, she passed away. But, you know, I wish you know, the whole thing about the HUD technology, like Google Glasses and all that. Mm-hmm. I want some face recognition software, not because I want to be a creepy spy, but because it's like, you met this guy in 2018 at Balticon and was like, oh, yes. Oh, my God. Now I remember, you know, and Fred Rogers had that. And that to me. And it's not so much for me. I feel bad because of like, I don't want you to think you're unimportant. I just have really poor memory. But he picked it right up. He sent Christmas cards to people he had met in the 70s, maybe once. There was a guy who wrote a biography about him, who said that he just became like his best friend for like the rest of his life. And I'm like, whoa, who has the time to like manage that type of thing? That's a skill I would like to have. I don't know if that's necessarily a masculine skill or a feminine skill, because usually social interaction has been classically regaled to the female arena. But that, you know, just like that was just one of the many things that Fred Rogers had. But of course, his kindness. And the fact that he respected everybody, and he knew just the right thing to say to like a bratty child or something like that to get them to calm down. If you read so many snippets online, he was an amazing human being, and I wish I could be just a fraction that good.
I think we all have that wish. Sorry, I'm echoing into my own headset. Why am I doing that? Stop it.
Caller, please, you're not.
I think we all have that desire. I mean, Fred Rogers is a great role model for everyone. And I think we all decided in the last episode that there really aren't masculine or feminine traits. It's just society has decided what is masculine and what is feminine. And I think one of the neat things about Fred Rogers is he showed that you can be a man and be compassionate. You can be a man and be kind.
Yes. It's what it is for me is that when we talked about the toxic masculinity, it's that these toxic men were exhibiting traits at the expense of someone else, and usually women. In my experience, it's not only at the expense of women, but at the expense of other men as well. The gay bashers, the bullies, the stereotypical, you know, jock attitude of picking on the nerd, you know, these are all toxic traits because they're at the expense of someone else. And all it takes to be positive is to not do that, is to, you know, exhibit traits within yourself that are not done at the expense of another person. We see this in politics a lot. It's the thing that annoys me the most. And I'm not getting on a soapbox here, and I certainly don't want to talk about any particular candidate in any particular race at all. But if as a politician, all you're going to do is stand up and tell me what's wrong with your opponent, I don't want to listen to you. If you're going to stand up and tell me what you want to do and what your platform is, I'll listen. I don't care what side you're on. I'll at least listen to you. But if your opening speech is, I have a 39-step plan, and 38 of those points are everything my opponent is doing wrong, I don't want to listen to you anymore. You don't have a plan. Your plan is to just don't vote for the other guy.
Yeah, pretty much. It's an anti-plan.
Right. and that's...
It's quite the opposite of a plan.
It is the exact opposite of a plan.
It's a reactionary thing. The guy breathes oxygen, too. Maybe you should stop that.
Mm. You know, and it's funny. Like, I know a lot of... I was listening to a podcast, and I can't remember which one it was, but they were talking about how they felt certain things were toxic masculinity that I didn't find those to be toxic at all. In fact, those were things that I was taught and explained by my mother growing up. Like, prime example, like, a man should have at least two suits, right? Like, a black, maybe a blue or a gray. A man should know how to tie a tie. Like, and
wait, toxic?
Like, no, I kid you not. On this podcast, they were like, it is toxic masculinity.
It's the patriarchy.
A man should tie a tie. And they were like, a clip-on is okay. I'm like, no, it's not. It looks atrocious.
Well, like, okay. So here's the deal. Like, everyone should be able to present themselves as best as they can, you know, barring expectations. You know, for instance, somebody with mobility issues is never going to be able to tie a tie, so a clip-on is just well and fine. But I think that that's the wrong example to use. You know, I think, I mean, I don't think that a real man must do X is ever a good thing to say, but I have a hard time with, you know, owning two suits means I'm a toxic male.
I remember holding the door open for someone one time. There's a lady behind me as I'm walking into a store. There's a woman behind me. I hold the door open for her, and she got mad. I can open my own door. My arms aren't broken. Fine. Okay. And I let the door go.
And then she go, mm-hmm.
Oh, I get around that by just opening the doors for everybody.
Right. See, and that's the thing. If had there been anyone behind me, I would have held the door open.
Yeah.
Well, and that's, I can just say, though, that now you have experienced what I have experienced when I open doors for men, which I still continue to do. Most of the time, they're appreciative because people are like, oh, hey, the person in front of me is holding the door for me. That was awesome.
I was in a crowded bar once, people everywhere, a big dude in front of me. As I'm walking, I get jostled. I bump into his back. I'm like, oh, man, I'm sorry. He turns around. He looks at me. He goes, don't let it happen again. I look back at him and I said, or what? I bumped into you. Sorry, and I moved it, and I'm pronouncing it Canadian here, sorry. And
Sorry.
And then I moved away back to my table, but yeah, don't let it happen again. Yeah, okay there, tough guy. Oh, yeah, you're big and scary. Yeah, show all your friends how big of a dude you are. Some dude bumped into you, and you're going to give him what for. Yeah.
So, I had a discussion with somebody who I would have considered a toxic male, and it was somebody who was very much against a gay marriage. And while staying PG, the whole thing seemed really to be centered around how they do it, you know. And I thought, what an odd thing. So are you saying that marriage only exists for sex? And so when you see two people getting married, you instantly picture them having sex. And he's like, well, you know, blah, 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 nature and all this stuff. And I said, like, so have you seen pictures of your parents' marriage? You know, and that, of course, that upset him. I struck the vein of gold of nerves with this guy. I swear to God, I thought he's going to punch me. And I'm probably going to deserve it. But, you know, I wanted to get his opinion on it. And it just occurred to me. It was like, oh, my God. Like, I've heard that the reason that homophobia exists is because there are some men who are afraid that other men will treat them like how they treat women. Mm-hmm. And, you know, which gets to another point about positive masculinity. There is, okay, so like I was married to somebody who I married very young. I was 20, she was 18. We were married, stayed married for 25 years. Sadly, she passed away in 2014. And it took me a while to date again. And of course, I knew that I was stuck in the past as far as like the last time I dated, I was like 19 years old. And I was like, what do I know? There was no cell phones or internet or any of that stuff.
You had to ask your parents' permission to use the phone.
I know. It was like, I'm going to be eaten alive. And I didn't date in high school. I had a rather bad home life, and I didn't want to like take a girlfriend back to that. I was just too embarrassed. But, you know, I started dating outside of high school. It's how I met my wife. And so, a lot of my standards of what dating was very different. Like I remember my friends before I started dating Christine, wanted to set me up with women with the premise being, and it took me a while to figure this out, that I would, have conjugal relations right away. It was a conjugal relations type of thing, you know? And I thought like, but I want to know a girl beforehand and blah, blah, blah. And they're like, no, you put a bag on her head and you do your business. And I'm like, dude, that is not cool. Like, women are people and all that. And they're like, oh, that's just like hippie stuff. And I was like, oh, wow. Like, I didn't know. Like, these were people in sci-fi fandom that I had no idea thought that way about women. And I was like, oh, you know. And then that caused an animosity because they're like, well, he isn't trying hard enough. And I'm like, why are you trying to get me to have conjugal relations?
Why are you trying to be my pimp?
Yeah. So, well. Okay, so hindsight is 20/20. That would have been a great thing to say to them. However, you know, they thought that would fix everything. Like, you know, once he has conjugal relations with a woman, then he'll be a man. And well, I thought to myself,
that goes back to the old idea of like, if a guy loses his virginity, then he's a man. So like the old trope of like going to a professional or something.
Yeah,
like
you know, it teaches that would you only anything. Make sense in a dystopian futuristic apocalypse society where there isn't many people around and you need to breed to keep the human race going. But I'm like, dude, we're from McLean, Virginia. There's no, we don't need more McLean people, you know. I wish I was that clever back then. The wit that I have now is a little different than I did at 19. But I ended up dating Christine, and we did not have conjugal relations the first few dates. And then, so, you know, fast forward, my wife has died. I've had a son. You know, I've had this job and all this life experience of running conventions and all this stuff. Suddenly I'm dating again. And I'm thinking, what is the role? And right now it's a hotbed of like, what is a man? What is, you know, in the positive masculinity? Well, I thought that I was positive. There are some things that I lack. I have a little bit of anxiety and then I suffer from depression, but my intentions are always honorable, or at least I like to think that they are. And if they're not, if somebody points it out, I will try and correct my behavior. And I don't think that's a weakness, but some people will see that as a weakness. And I think one of the positive masculinity choices is to, in the face of adversity, that you keep your ideals without going so far that you overshoot the entire process and become toxic. Because a lot of the things that are considered toxic masculinity are things that are good in small quantities, like being self-confident, I think, is a positive masculine choice, and I try for that. But being an arrogant douche is not. You know, yeah. Like, hey, like the Andrew Dice Clay, if anyone remembers that.
The best part was that he had a wife and kids, and it was all an act.
Yeah,
it was. He was like, oh, Bo, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like, yeah, you know. And then he had South Park. Now, I think I'm not against South Park. And I watched, I think, until the Christopher Reeves episode. And then the whole thing of what he was doing with fetuses was that was over the top for me for comedy. And I'm like, I'm done. And I stopped watching it after that. But I don't protest or anything. It just became uncomfortable for me. But I think a lot of people who watch Beavis and Butthead and South Park didn't get that it was trying to be ironic.
Yeah.
And they started just emulating. Oh, it's funny. It's funny. It's good to get away with this type of thing and to do this kind of thing. And I think in the positive masculine role is to go above that, to realize that you're not the only person in the world, that people do not exist to serve you. And a strength in community and strength in playing fair with other people, even when you really want to like punch somebody in the face, you don't. Like, you know, we have you who does the martial arts. I can't remember which
Aikido.
One. Aikido, thank you. I have so many friends who practice martial arts, I lose track. But Aikido,
we don't punchy kicky, we grabby throwy.
Right, yeah, you're all about balance, if I recall correctly. Yep. So you know, but you can take some of your aggression and use it for writing. You know, I wrote a book called Space Bitch, and it passes the Bechdel test because it involves two or more women who are main characters who talk to each other and not about a man. And but they're all psychotic because I didn't want to go for the tropism of like, you know, it's like, oh, so they're this pro-feminist thing. No, they're all neurotic. One is like a complete psychotic person with no motivation other than to hurt people because she thinks it's funny. We have somebody going through a midlife crisis, and then we have somebody who is an assassin of a gothic Catholic cult that is not allowed to be negative. And so she has to somehow, she's not allowed to use the word no or can't. Or, I considered it more of like a positive feminine role model because it's like, look, women can be people. Yeah. George R. R. Martin said that. So here's a bunch of, yeah, I know, right? But I've been like, one positive masculine thing is understanding that women are people. I've always considered women to be the same as I am, just with different plumbing. And that's it. Intellectually, it all washes out. There are some, you know, masculine women, there are some effeminate women, there's some masculine men and some effeminate men. And especially in fandom, you see more extremes of that.
And just like with men, there's so much diversity in being a man and being masculine, yes, exactly. Whatever that is. And I think, you know, you're kind of getting to the point there that showing weakness is strength. You know, I remember back in the 80s, people
or
tried
admitting
to,
weakness
or admitting it. Yeah, that people tried to bring up the whole idea that, you know, it's okay for men to cry. And then it became a thing like, oh, women just want men to cry. And it's like, no, we don't want men to cry. We want men to know that it's okay if they cry. It's okay if they want a best bud relationship. It's okay if they want to express their emotions. We still see them as men. And, you know, more importantly, they should see themselves as men.
Yeah.
Because it shouldn't be our opinion.
Yeah.
It's, and I think something that a lot of men has fallen into and is a lack of self-assessment. Like, they don't see things wrong with themselves until someone points it out. And
then they even get very defensive about it because it, especially if their ego is fragile, it's all built like this house of cards. And then they're afraid someone will poke one and the whole thing will collapse, you know?
Yeah. And you know, that's one of the things that like it, I can't say that on this podcast either. All right. I tell people I'm an a-hole, but I'm an equal opportunity a-hole. I will gladly make fun and or insult everyone equally, so don't feel special, I promise.
I had one of my students lodge an official harassment complaint against me. He said, well, I don't like it when he called me a liar. So the harassment investigator, he goes, I was very humiliated and demeaned, and he was very mean to me when he yelled at me and he called me a liar. And the investigator looks at the file and looks at him and says, well, did you lie to him? He says, well, yeah, but only a couple times.
I get a few free throws, right?
I got a couple strikes, right?
Wait, wait. I'm only on strike three. Wait. You know, I'm not sleeping with your sister.
You know, and it's also, I think one of the things a lot of guys don't like.
Hang on. Tech, that's a no. You do not get three strikes with my sisters.
Yeah.
Oh!
I got a lot of them, but no.
From New York, run, Tech, run. But no, it's one of the things I think a lot of guys avoid, and I don't think they should, is speaking up when they do see something.
Yes, that's true. And I have, correctly. I will admit, I have done that. I have stayed quiet because I've been told by authorities, let's not make a deal out of this. And I know that if I make a deal out of it, I will be fired.
Yeah.
Well, here's an example.
That's made me feel very uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. One time, many moons ago, I'm making the many moons ago gesture. I'll do it again. Many moons ago, Nutty and I were dating. We were at a bar. And while we were dancing on the dance floor, someone was making fun of the way Nutty was dancing.
He was doing the because there were different levels, and he was standing behind me making a gesture like I was performing something on him.
Right. So, and he thought it was real funny. So I point this out to Nutty. Nutty turns around, looks at him, and says something to the effect of, your mother must be proud, to which point he informs us that his mother is dead and how dare we disrespect her, which leads into large enough of an argument that we get kicked out. We go across the
I simply said that, you know, she wouldn't be very proud of him from the grave either.
But, so, you know. so we get kicked out of the place by, you know, security guys, and then we left shortly after we were kicked out.
We left shortly before we were kicked out.
Right. Yeah. So then we go across the street to the pizza joint. We're waiting in line at the pizza joint, and the fight begins again because the guys are right behind us in line. And then we get kicked out of the pizza joint, and we're out in the parking lot, and there's Nutty teeing off against three guys.
Meanwhile, just for clarification, I'm not going around picking fights. These guys are following me around yelling at me.
I figured.
They're continuing the fight. I was done.
Right. Yeah. So there's Nutty teeing off against three guys, and one of their buddies, one of these three guys' buddies, goes around the whole crowd and goes to me, and I'm just standing behind Nutty, and he goes, aren't you going to defend your girl? I'm like, why does she need defending right now? And they're like,
I think she's doing pretty good on her own.
Yeah, it's like, are you not going to step up there and defend her? It's like, no, I'm not stupid. I know what you're doing. You guys aren't willing to punch her, but you're more than willing to put me in the hospital in a 3-on-1. So you want me to step up there so you guys can have your fight. Well, it's not going to happen. She picked this fight. She can pick her way out of it, and she's doing just fine on her own.
I still maintain he picked it by being lewd in public like
right.
that.
Right. So at this point, the fourth guy is now joined by a fifth, and the two of them are now going at me, which now, of course, my sexuality is in question. My strength is in question.
According to them.
Everything about me is in question because I'm refusing to go.
I'm taking a look at you and I know your whole sexual history.
Right. Because you're refusing to go to the hospital right now.
Apparently, he likes men because he won't defend his girlfriend.
Who doesn't need defending because she's keeping three guys?
You're throwing logic at an illogical problem.
And then it's like, no, she's a big girl. She picked her way into this fight. Yeah. She can pick her way back out, and I'll step in when I need to. Oh, well, this is just because you're gay and all of these things. And aren't you gonna step in there and defend her? No, because I'm not going to hospital for you. Because
and like being called gay is the worst thing ever.
Oh, no.
I know. Well, to them it is, you know.
Yeah. Right. So at this point, the fight is over. Nutty grabs me by the collar. We decide to leave. And the night is fine. But this whole idea of...
They looked at me wrong. He stepped on my sneakers.
Well, you were right. That is a common... tactic that is used, and they're like, well, can't fight her because if the cops come, they're going to see I beat up this, you know, five against one girl.
Yeah. But I would have won anyway.
One guy, you know, that's, you know, or whatever. And so they're like, aren't you going to fight, bro? What's wrong, bro? You know, that kind of stuff. Like you're so insecure about it. And you're like, listen, I think she's handling herself. Now, my late wife, Christine, she handled herself. Now, there were some times when she got very aggro, as they say in the roller derby community. Somebody stole her parking spot once. And it was very blatant and very obvious because she gave this kind of nyeh look when she left. And
Christine in New York, you don't do that.
She actually pulled the parking brake and she got out of the car and started like speed walking towards this woman. Said, excuse me, come back here for a second. I didn't hear you. What did you say? And of course, this is one of those skinny girls with UGG boots, you know, that was going into Home Depot to pick up gardenias. I don't know. But she's like suddenly walking quickly, you know, and Christine says, I didn't hear you. You know, it's like, and so I shouted after Christine. I was like, Christine, please, you just got off parole for beating up that girl. How many women do you have to like disfigure before you're finally satisfied? And that girl just like books it into like Christine's like, you're not helping. You're not.
Did you at least defuse the situation by making her laugh?
Yeah. Well, no. It's just like that. But it was. I kind of grew up with kind of this balance, and it seems like a lot of lessons that I was taught young, I took as an adult and then found they were really rare. And I'm like, but dude, there are all these people in the classroom with me. Like what happened? You know, like why aren't they picking up? Now you'd brought up like, one thing about, standing up for yourself when you see something is wrong. And I have worked for companies. Like I worked for one company where I knew that they were turning down female applicants for tech jobs. And I said, like, you know, one of my friends applied, and she said that you just told her that you had the resume and you're looking at it. And the guy, and somebody I never thought I would hear say this, he's like, women are complicated. And I was like, and literally I had no idea what that meant. I'm like, what do you mean by complicated? And he's like, okay, so you know, like how women, like every 28 days, they go nuts. And I was like, well, like a werewolf? Yeah, like a werewolf. I was being sarcastic, and now you're agreeing with me. And you know, I wanted him to say it. And he said something like, he's like, well, we have clients that come through here, and they see, you know, people on computers. They don't want to see some girl with tampons all over her desk. And I'm like, whoa. And that was like the head of our sales.
He had ever worked with a woman, he might know how untrue that is.
You know, and I'm sure if I gave him that argument, he'd have some counter thing about like, you know, what do they call it? That type of arguing, like where you anecdotal evidence. Yeah. You know, it's like, well, this one time, this woman like was driving a car and crashed. So obviously women shouldn't drive or whatever, you know, but he and I was actually shocked. Like my face turned red, I think, because when I'm counted by that kind of sexism and racism, I'm like, damn, you know, and that's illegal to say like, I won't hire a woman because they're complicated, you know, and I knew complicated was a word he was trying to use diplomatically, and, you know, and he wanted to say something else. What? I don't know, but I wanted him to call it out like it was. And I ended up leaving that company because there was a lot of that. And they said like, we have a female vice president, so we're not sexist. Yeah, but she only comes in 3 days a week and she buys your coffee. You know, it's like,
wow.
Yeah. Well, it was you know, it was.
I want to change tack ever so slightly. You know, I want to ask. I want to go around. I want to talk about examples in media. Like we talked about Fred Rogers and the Rogers Rule, but I want to know if there's any other examples out there of a good example. And I'll start with a horrible example because this is I know. Shut up. Because this is something that's been bugging me for a long time. It's you know, I didn't date in high school because by rules of society I wasn't allowed. I was a nerd. I liked history. I was skinny. I was into computer programming. I didn't play on any sports teams. And by the rules of Saved by the Bell, that made me a nerd. And because I wasn't Zach Morris and I wasn't A.C. Slater, it meant I wasn't allowed to talk to the pretty girls. And if I did, I would be jammed into a locker. And these were societal rules that even Archie Comics and all of the media aimed at young adults perpetuated these rules that if you were not the valedictorian, class president, captain of three teams with a Letterman jacket, you did not get to talk to girls.
Weird. I don't think we had anything like that in my high school, but it was like...
No. He's saying this is what TV was telling him.
This is what TV okay, told me.
Like through Saved by the Bell.
Right, and these other shows.
Like Screech and all that.
Right, yeah. So this is what the message was. And anytime I ever attempted anything, it was with so much fear and so much anxiety, not about being rejected by the girl, but by the fact that it's a pretty girl and I want to talk to her. It means that there's a Zach Morris and an A.C. Slater that are going to come pound the dust out of me for even daring to look at a girl. So I didn't date till I was like 21 because...
Well, you matured a little bit, I'm sure, since then.
Well,
so.
Sure. Yeah. But why would I put myself through that aggravation? So
sorry.
No, it was this toxic masculinity doesn't even have to be anything blatant. It doesn't have to be anything aggressive. It doesn't have to be anything...
Yeah, often it's the heroes doing it.
Well, the whole message is pervasive. Mm-hmm. And the example I want to bring up of positive masculinity is Bato from Ghost in the Shell, one of my favorite movies and shows. Because Bato is the sidekick. He's the sidekick to the major, the main female protagonist of the TV show. And as you watch the show and you watch the movies, Bato is seriously attracted to
him. And we mean animated movies.
Yeah, I'm not watching the live action, and the live action doesn't count. It doesn't exist. That is a bad
live action. I didn't know that.
No, they didn't. It was a fever dream.
I like both. I like the cartoon version better, but you know, I took it on its own. Like right. I took it as like a separate piece. So
to finish is that even a guy that is deeply attracted to a woman who is his superior, he never once thinks that she needs rescuing. He never once tries to, like, overpower her or get into these situations. Even in the original movie, when he needs to rescue her, he shows up late.
Yeah.
It's like, where the – she's, like mangled in pieces. Where the hell were you? It's like, I had to go home and get my standard issue Big Gun. I was late because I had to run home and get it.
Well, and he doesn't think that she owes him anything.
Yeah, exactly.
Because of the friendship and any of the times that he's saved her.
Why is she dating all of these jerks? Why doesn't she like any nice guys? You never hear Bato say
that. Yeah, Bato never says that. And Bato physically looks like that idea that people picture when they picture toxic masculinity.
The big strapping muscles, that super sexy voice that sounds just like Richard Epcar for some reason.
For some reason. And I think I know which bumper I'm going to use on this one. you know, he's got the brush cut and the little cyber eyes, and he looks all hard and stern, but he's caring. He doesn't expect anything from the major.
Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
He quotes Shakespeare.
He's in touch with his own emotions. He's there for her. He's there for other people. He's there for men, not just, you know, he's not only emotional to women. Bato's actually pretty awesome.
Yeah. You know, no, I'll agree with that.
And when you think about that, again, he also easily could have been a very non-intuitive male, and I think that's where a lot of guys lose themselves. They're not very intuitive when it comes to reading a room, right? Like, you can joke with people and you can joke with them differently. But you also have to realize, like, some people can't deal with that. And again, it's that self-assessment. Yeah. And I refer to myself all the time. I say this, I think Nettie always corrects me when I say this, but I tell people all the time, I'm a pocket feminist. Like, I'm not like, it's not that I have a problem with feminism. It's just that I'm not that dude. Like,
except you are.
I'm an equal opportunity a-hole.
You may not go to rallies, but because you treat people with equality and you expect things from people equally is what makes you a feminist.
And I think that's what it's both toxic, but it's also not, because if you can look at another dude and be like, hey, I'm gonna, you know, chill out a little bit, you know. Oh, what? You're just a bleeding heart. Well, yeah, kind of. But, you know, it's fine. Like, and it's this side, to, you know.
I think bleeding heart's pretty metal. If your heart's bleeding, yeah, heart's still alive. That's like, dang.
But it's being able to ride that line. And a lot of it is just natural impulses because, you know, people don't want to think this, but we're animals, people.
We are.
Trust me. And, you know, and a lot of it is just again, testosterone is a natural aggressive thing and it makes you do aggressive things, but you have to be able to curb those. And again,
which is why women, when they have their wolf time, is when they have the most testosterone.
Riding the scarlet wave.
One of my students got into a fight at a bar because he accidentally stepped on a dude's sneakers, which, quote, disrespected him.
Right, scuffed them.
Right.
Which would keep them blindingly white.
Right, and because of the because of the disrespect caused by accidentally treading on a dude's kicks, this led to a fist fight.
That's because they started a moment.
Right. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Right.
I think that there's a lot of people that really just there's a lot of both men and women that are out there that they really want to prove themselves. I've known a lot of women who are mean to other women because they see being in the workplace as a finite resource for women, and so they backstab. And I'm not saying all women do this, but no. Some do.
Yeah. You see that in gaming groups as well, where there's only one woman per gaming group, and she normally won't let other women in.
Well, and you see it among men, too, because it's like, oh, no, I don't want him. Like, they won't say it, but they don't want that guy in their guild because they're better than they are, and they need to be the top dog. They need to be the one that knows the way that we do this.
We are such petty creatures, all of us.
Mm. See, for me, like, one of the things you learn in management is you should never be afraid to hire somebody better than you are. You are
agreed.
Like, nobody, like, sort of like being a manager is like being a ringmaster. Nobody goes to the circus to see the ringmaster. They go to see all the acts. So obviously you want somebody who's better at lion taming than you are, somebody better at trapeze than you are, somebody who's better clown than you are. And then you're just
placed. Yeah. You cannot be promoted. If you cannot be replaced, you cannot be promoted. So if you are not willing to foster that next generation, if you're not willing to foster the development of that person to become the next you, you're never going to leave your job.
Yeah, and a lot of management positions in fandom, particularly, I work for a few years and then I give it to someone else. One, because if you stay in a position for too long, and I was sad, I tried to find the original quote, and it really is from Batman, is like, you know, you die the hero or you live long enough to be the villain. And yes. I found that. Well, it's true, and it's very true. Like, I've noticed it in fandom management. Like, if you have run I just retired the art show. I ran Ketsucon Art Show for many years, and it was my retirement thing for president. And so I got it to where it was running really well, and then I handed it off because I have other things to do. And it wasn't the specialness. It wasn't like, you know, oh, I was in charge. Look at me. I'm a boss person, you know, and all that. I hired some of the best people, and one of them ended up getting promoted to take my place. So that's a good thing to happen. So I think that there's a lot of people, like you said about the game masters, who refuse to hire a player better than them. You should hire a player better than you. Now, obviously, you don't want to hire a player who's an obnoxious twit, but you know, it's if you've got somebody, I had a gamer who I was 15 years old. This kid was 12. He was like one of the best players I ever had. He did all this like special stuff. He always he bent the rules in his favor, but he thought a lot about them. And of course, the other players were always behind him because they're like, wow, it's a really good idea. We should do that. And I'm like, wow, that really tips the balance. So like, oh, we can do this to balance it and mitigate it. But I wasn't upset that he came up with these good ideas. I was amused in most cases in a good way, like, ah, that is funny, you know. There are a lot of people that will not, that they get to the top and they're like, I got to stay on the top by like, oh, you know, knocking everybody down. And then they spend their whole life alone. And we're social creatures. And most of us need people. And that's another reason why I kind of treat men and women like as equals as best I can, because I don't want to be lonely.
Are there any other examples? Anybody else have any other examples in media of?
Well, you brought up Bato, and I had somebody else that I was going to bring up that was like Leon from The Professional.
Oh, no, yes. Yes.
Ooh, yeah. You just rung the bell for tech.
Because, like, you know, there was a time now in the international edition, like, you know, the young girls tries to seduce him, and he goes, no. No, that this isn't going to happen. And he thought
about
it. I can't
watch it.
Yeah.
I have the collector's edition that has that European edit of that scene. I won't watch it.
No. Because Luc Besson's a creepy dude.
He is. But I thought, like, you know, he took care of it. He did what he needed to do. And he treated her like, okay, if you want to learn under me, these are the rules. These are the rules. And, you know, you don't do that. You keep your lens cap down until the last minute because they can see the reflection and all that kind of stuff. And he treated her as somebody, like as a neophyte, not as like a little girl who doesn't know what she's doing. At first he approaches it that way, but then he realizes, you know, that they have a good working relationship. And so that, to me, you know, if you take Bato as an example, he pretty much, you know, didn't care whether she was a girl or not. And then when she tried to do the girly thing, he's like, no. You know, so, and that was good because he knew that she was vulnerable and that she was young.
Right.
And that you don't do that sort of thing because even though they think they want it, they don't. And, yeah. And yeah.
There's a scene in Standalone Complex where Bato has been going on and on and on the whole series about how attracted he is to the major, but that no matter how much he barks up that tree, nothing ever happens.
Well, she's, you know, an android. Right. So it's like,
but there's a scene where he's in her house and she's running away from these bad guys. He's in her house and he's looking for something and he's going through her dresser drawers and he opens up the one drawer and it's her panty drawer and he looks down and he goes, huh, I knew I'd find it. It's finally here. And then he reaches under the panties and he grabs the pistol.
Yeah.
And he takes the pistol and he goes...
Yeah. Yep. So, Jason, what's one of your examples?
I know this is going to be very cliche, but The Boy in Blue, and that's Superman, right? And it's one of the reasons why people are so upset with the version of Superman that we got in Man of Steel. And I actually had this conversation with my boy James, and I was like, and he was like, you know what? They don't understand that this dude is an alien. He has the ability to hold himself to a moral compass higher than us so we can aspire to it. And I think he's a good example of not toxic masculinity because he doesn't try to force his beliefs on people, but he uses his stance as an example for others to follow. He doesn't try to force you to be like him, but if he is the best version of himself, you can't deny that that's appealing. You can't deny that you're like, man, I want to be like that. Whereas Batman's the opposite, right? Like Batman's like, it's my way or the highway.
Yeah, well, Batman flawed is quite a lot of fun for those flaws.
For those reasons. Yeah. And, you know, people, well, Superman's not exciting. No, it's not because he always does what's right. He always holds himself to a higher standard. And I think.
Well, I don't think that's why people say he's not exciting. I think it's because he's a god.
Yeah.
The stakes aren't the green rock, and he's always able to recharge in the sun. The stakes aren't the same, which is one of the reasons why people complain about him.
You know, and I think also
it seems too easy from a writer's point of view. Like, oh yeah, he has. It's like the Justice League of the '70s, the cartoon show. It's like, oh yeah, he has that power too. Using his thing with Ted Knight, you know, and
hey, let's come up with a different color kryptonite, and it's going to do something different to him. All right,
there you go.
Same kind of thing.
And no, and I think that concept. But I think that idea of holding yourself to a higher standard, right? Like, you can't tell someone else you should be this way if you don't hold yourself to that same standard.
Be the change you want to see in the world.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, Jen, do you have any examples?
So I have kind of an unconventional example, actually.
Why'd you look at me when you said that?
Because you're going to laugh when I say this. So, Ranma one half. And like I said, we're going to laugh when I said
that. I'm listening.
So Ranma knows what it's like from both sides.
Okay.
And so he has
to explain for the audience that may not have seen this obscure 80s manga is that when he gets wet, he changes gender.
Right. But it's like hot he turns one and cold he turns into the other.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Somebody turns into a duck. Somebody else turns into a panda.
He's the McDLT of anime characters. One thing you thought, side. Sorry.
We are so old. Continue, Dan.
Yeah, I know.
So with Ranma, like, he would rather stay a dude. But when he has his moments of being a woman and he has dudes that hit on him or he has people that tell him he has to be a certain way, he's like, no. He says, why does anybody have to do that?
Yeah.
And he's like, and he just knows what it's like to be a woman and to get, you know, ostracized for that. And he knows what it's like to be a man and be told he needs to be more manly.
Yeah, he is actually, you know, it's funny you brought that up, but it's true. In this show, there are scenes where certain characters, the lecherous characters, fondle him or take his panties, and he gets super upset. And usually in an anime, you would see like the main character doing that or embodying that. Where in this, Ranma, and he does it throughout the series, like he slowly and gets a more understanding of like, man, so this is kind of what the other side's like, huh? And he gets that understanding. And again, he does some self-assessment. And he's like, I should probably stop being a dick to so-and-so, especially since now every time I get splashed with cold water, I turn into a female.
A donkey, you mean. So what you're saying is he doesn't start out as a positive example, but he ends up becoming a positive example.
Indeed. And he, now I will give him much credit in this, is that he does treat martial artists, even the female martial artists, with the same type of respect because they are martial artists and some other stuff. It's not too bad. Although I will say those latter seasons aren't too good, but it's probably the best thing Rumiko Takahashi's ever done other than Urusei Yatsura. But anyway.
All right.
How about you, Nutty?
Yeah, I was trying to think because there's a couple of different places I can go here, and it's tricky. I am going to choose Jean-Luc. No, I'm going to choose Captain Sisko from Star Trek. I was going to use Jean-Luc Picard, who is also a positive, but I'm going to go with Sisko.
Okay.
Because he has a lot more flaws. And he also has had to overcome certain things. He had to overcome hatred of Jean-Luc because he was Locutus and killed his wife. He had to overcome certain prejudices. But you see so much emotion from him. But also what I love is his relationship with Jake. Now, when I first watched the series Deep Space Nine, I was like, oh, Jake is so annoying. Why is he even in the show? But watching it again, now that I'm older, I really appreciate the relationship that he has with Jake, because from day one, it is loving. He embraces his son all the time. He is always hugging him or just putting a hand on him or things that fathers do with sons
and
or
even,
should be.
And even with, you know, his son choosing, you know, Ben coming from a working class family with his father being the cook in a Louisiana restaurant and him, being a military man and loving rough and tumble sports and his son choosing to be a writer by trade.
Writers. Ugh.
Yeah, exactly. Ugh. You have to use like your brain and stuff. But even then, he totally supports his son in his chosen profession.
Yeah. And you know, there's conflicts, you know, like with the women that Jake ends up, as he gets older, he ends up dating women that his father doesn't quite approve of.
His friend that no one approves of.
Which is, yeah, and the huge racism going on with Ben and Frangies and having to overcome all of that. But yeah, there's so much emotion going on. There's friendships that he has, and he has to deal with the fact that his best friend is now a woman. Because, you know, he was best friends with Dax when it was Curzon Dax. And then the worm is put into Jadzia. And he has to figure out, how do I maintain this friendship?
But from the very beginning, he sorts out everybody else is uncomfortable and awkward with it.
Yeah.
Except Ben.
Well, there's a couple of times that he's like, this is a little interesting.
It's weird that you're 25 and hot, yeah. But I'll get over that.
Or, you know, when talking about my son becoming a man and possibly losing his virginity, I'm talking to the guy that was guiding me through it, but you're a woman now, and my son has a crush on you. It makes for things a little bit awkward, but he's always able to respect her. He's always
Let's
able
be honest,
to
res- now, we all had a crush on Jadzia.
Yeah. he's always able to respect Kira. He's able to respect pretty much everyone, which is very positive in my opinion, but also he's then not only nurturing to his son and his friends, but he then becomes a really fantastic mentor for Worf when they don't have an emotional relationship, but they establish one in a mentor mentee situation.
Mm-hmm. You know, you hit on something, and that's and actually Tech and Nutty, you both actually blended together here, because Tech, you talked about how there was a lot of toxic masculinity that is displayed through, you know, television and media. Mm-hmm. And one of those things is a non-nurturing father. They always show, you know, in movies and film, and it's societally, they say a father should be stern and hard and not emotion. He should have no emotion. He should not be. That's the woman's thing.
He's the disciplinarian. Wait till your father gets home.
When you said that, the first thing I thought of was the dad from the Twisted Sister video. What are you gonna do with your life?
You know,
and it's, you know, and it's, but looking, but when you see a positive version of that, a very nurturing father, a very caring father, a father who's not afraid to cry or let his son know that it's okay to cry. That is a wonderful example of non-toxic masculinity, because
and to show physical affection to your son.
Yeah. Because it's one thing to see a dad be affectionate to his daughter, finally, you know, King Triton, he's all rough and mean with Ariel, but by the end, he's nurturing. But we don't see that often enough with sons.
And the fact that, you know, there is an age where it becomes weird, but throughout the seven seasons of Deep Space Nine, all through the adolescence of Jake into young adulthood, the physical affection from his father and the I love yous and all of that never stopped. It never became weird. They never made it weird. It's just, he's my son, I'm his dad, and I love him.
Yeah. And that's how it should be. I mean, if I can, you know, walk with my mom holding hands, why couldn't a son walk with his dad holding hands at any age?
I mean, we have, you know, we talked about this when we did the episode for the Ghibli cast, when we talked about My Neighbor Totoro and the father in that. And, you know,
that's a really good example.
You know, and there's like the thing that causes people freaking out. This guy's wife is sick. She's in a sanitarium. He has no, there is no mother figure in this relationship. So he has to be mom and dad. And there's the scene where he's taking a bath with his daughters, and it's not awkward to me. Like when I was really little, I took baths with my mom all the time. And to see that, you see that he has to do things that he probably wouldn't have done. Because to be honest, if his wife was healthy, she probably would have done that. But he stepped up and handled it. And it was done in a very non-creepy, non-upsetting way. It was very innocuous. And it was very, very nice. It was very cute.
The problem is North Americans have just such skewed ideas of propriety that
I have this whole twisted paranoid theory about like why sexuality is treated that way in America, having to do with capitalism, corporation, and profit. But I won't divulge, you know, divert the podcast in that direction. But,
Americans are Americans love boobs, but they're afraid of boobs.
Yes, and in doing that, so you can sell it. You can sell things with it because it's a forbidden fruit, you know, and it's like it was a they used to sell like cars with girls with bikinis on them. And a friend of mine said, like, you always knew like a true guy worked on his Mopar. He's like, I can't see the exhaust pipes. Move that woman.
Yeah, why is she sitting on the hood? She's going to scratch it.
Why is she sitting on the hood? She'll be burned if that engine has been running in the last 2 hours.
George Martin has a great quote about that where he says, you know, we should all fear a society that's more comfortable with watching an axe go into a head than we are watching a penis go into a vagina.
Mm. Yeah, because he talked about it where he was like, he's like, when he does a sex scene, people get bent out of shape, but if he has a barbarian rip some dude's head off, they're cool with it.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yep.
I mean,
a lot of angry, repressed people out there.
Justin Timberlake, Janet Jackson, somebody sued for traumatic damages to their 10-year-old son because the 10-year-old
saw. That's one of those things where I really hope aliens aren't listening because I feel like I'm like, no, we're not all like that. They're listening and they've kind of coned off the
solar system. They're like, just don't bother.
We didn't care.
they're the yokels.
We were attention. Like, did we just see that? What was that supposed to mean?
You attention, know, like, everyone in the prosthetic galactic civilization, the entire Western arm of the spiral galaxy is now forbidden.
Yeah.
Do not go into the Western spiral arm.
It's like in almost every original Star Trek episode where they meet a god race, and the god race is like, you guys are about 1,000 years off from being able to join us. We'll be back.
Yeah.
Yeah. So are there any other examples in media you guys want to bring up?
I have to bring him up again because he's one of my always favorites. I got to bring up Maxwell Smart, Agent 86 of Control.
Okay, but he never shows his weakness.
Code of Silence.
I love Max. Missed
it by that much.
Yeah, exactly. He missed it by that much. But the beauty of Max is that he is madly in love with 99. And that no matter, and there's some episodes where, you know, they show the deep sexism of the 60s where even as competent and as professional as 99 is, the spy union won't have her join because she's a woman. So she has to negotiate her contract through the secretary's union because they won't let women into the union. But she saves his butt in every single episode. And the beauty of it is when you watch it as often as I have, even from the very beginning, Max knows it.
Yeah.
He knows it just as much as 99 does. And there's these wonder. There's a running gag. There's like 1,000 running gags in this show. But there's the running gag where 99 would go, what we need to do is go through the green door.
No, 99. No. What we need to do is go through that green door.
That's a good idea, Max. And then she gives this huge eye roll. And she's willing to play into the fantasy. But the beauty of it, if you watch it enough, the beauty of it is that Max is playing into the fantasy too. That 99 isn't allowed to win because society isn't there yet. But I think that behind closed doors in their relationship, everybody knows the truth of what's going on. I think Max is a great example of and you know, if you watch further on into the movie they did in the 90s where they end up getting married and they have twins, and if you watch the TV show that only lasted a couple episodes, their son is Andy Dick, but I'm willing to ignore all of that. That he knows the beauty and the complexity and the professionalism that is his wife, and then his girlfriend at this point, but they get married in like season 4.
Yeah, I'm not correcting you.
Okay, you know, you just looked up into the camera and gave like a sudden confused
look. Yeah, there was a sound thing. Just ignore me. Okay. Go.
So. But with all of this, it's that they both know that they both have an equal part to play in keeping up the charade that Max is the one in charge because that's where society is at the time.
I suppose. I'm gonna throw out a different character, and I'm not sure. I don't think you and Jason actually watch the show, but Orphan Black, there's a character called Felix, who I think is a prime example of positive masculinity. And it's in a way that a lot of people might not see as masculinity. So Felix is gay, and he is quite flamboyant, and he paints nude, and will sometimes just wear outlandish outfits.
He paints nudes, or he
no,
paints
he paints while nude.
While he, okay.
Yeah, so he'll have like an apron and nothing on.
Like Senpai from...
Yes, a lot like Senpai. Oh, that's another good one.
From Food Wars?
Senpai from Food Wars is another really good example. But these are characteristics that traditionally people would say, oh, that's not masculine at all. But it is, because he is a man and he owns it, and he's not trying to be a woman. He's not trying to be feminine. He's just living his own existence and saying, yeah, I'm an artist, and I like to wear flashy things, and I'm going to wear my sister's jeans. I don't care. It doesn't change how much of a man I am. And he's a good role model to all of the children in that show, because he's like the best uncle and more nurturing than most of the parents. And I think that that is something that I think is important. You know, it's like, you don't have to look all raw, raw, whatever, and show kindness. Your masculinity can present itself however is comfortable to you.
Two examples that I've thought of, and it's kind of dicey. One of them is John Candy played this rather obscure movie. I think it was a John Hughes movie called Uncle Buck.
Yes, and, not obscure at all.
Yeah,
I'm obscure.
That's a bald bear.
That was one of those movies where I really liked. I mean, he did have some issues with his girlfriend, but he really cared about his nieces and nephew. And, you know, even though the parents had to go away, I think it was due to a funeral. I can't remember. It's been a while since I've seen it. But, you know, he had to go to, I think it was his niece, Maisie. He had to go for a teacher's conference, and it was just this absolutely nasty woman who said that she is a silly heart and a daydreamer. And he's like, I don't think I'd want to know a six-year-old who isn't a silly heart and daydreamer.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, he takes care of the teenage girlfriend, even though she almost, like, completely destroys his relationship with his tenuous girlfriend, as it was. I thought, you know, I haven't seen the movie in a while, so there might be, like, some, you know, sexism that occurs in there that I'm not remembering. But another one that I want to put out there, does anyone remember a show called The Middleman?
The Middleman. No.
The Middleman came out. It was a story about, like, this woman who is working, I think, in a chemistry lab as a temp job. And while she's answering the phones, behind her is this big clear wall where they're doing, like, some sort of experiment, and it gets out of control, and there's a monster, like, they opened a gate to something, and this kind of silly-looking monster comes out and is attacking everyone, and it's destroying the lab, and because it's happening right behind her, she doesn't know, and she's on the phone, and then she turns around, and all she sees is the carnage afterwards. She's like, oh my god, this guy shows up, and he identifies himself as the middleman, and what he does, the whole premise is all the weird stuff that goes on. This is the guy. It's kind of like a Men in Black type of theme, but it was done in an incredibly unique way. And Clarence Colton, he was the middleman, and he had noticed that, you know, he said, like, wow, so I just told you, like, this creature came from this gate and ate all these scientists behind you, and you don't find that, like, really alarming? And she's like, well, you know, I live in New York, so you know, it's like,
I know, it happens.
So you know, he hires her. And he hires her to be eventually the replacement, because only one middleman can exist. And it's a very tongue in cheek, almost like a Men in Black meets Veronica Mars meets there was this one I can't remember, but it was one of those things where everybody's dialogue is really witty, and even the narrator, like, they have, like, a type on the bottom that said, like, and Wendy goes back to her apartment, an illegal loft above an abandoned art studio or something like that. She's living illegally in rent, and all these things have gone wrong in her life, and she's just trying to make it, and her dad died and all this. Great series, would recommend it. But Clarence Colton is a former Marine, but he has this incredibly like Wonder Bread, like kind of like good boy kind of thing. And he's got this kind of like Boy Scout thing. And so he says like, well, I'll train you to be the next middleman. And so, you know, like the second episode, she has to retrieve his master, Sensei Ping, who is actually a martial arts expert, but also currently a lucha libre wrestler. And apparently, and I can't remember, he had a trigger word that she used that makes him go crazy. And she's like, I can't believe this, you know, and then she mentions it and he goes crazy and then he runs away and he's missing. So they have to go find Sensei Ping. But he's, despite the fact that she screws up, he's a very kind individual, never like tries to hit on her, sleep on her with her, anything like that. And I thought that he was a rather positive role model. But look up The Middleman. It's out on DVD, probably in the discount bin somewhere. But it was on for 2 seasons. Hilarious. I loved it. But he was a good example of a positive male role model.
I've looked it up, by the way, and it looks like they remade it.
Did they?
Yeah. So there's that.
since you know, that reminds me of a certain fellow we didn't mention who is no longer a fellow, but the doctor.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
The doctor is a wonderful example of masculinity.
All his iterations.
Yeah.
Yes. Mind you, he is my favorite still, and I will point to David Tennant's doctor. David Tennant's doctor is very flamboyant. Like, he's a very flamboyant, very animated doctor. And it's never taken as something demeaning for him to be. You know, a prime example in later forms of the doctor, when Capaldi takes over and Clara gets her boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, God, what do they call him? It's, oh, gosh. They give,
well,
the doctor
he's a teacher.
Gives him, yeah. The doctor gives him a nickname and calls him something, but
anyway.
He's, you know, it's one of the few times you see a person as a teacher, and he's a very caring teacher. He's very much worried about his students and Clara and all this stuff. Like, oh God, what did they call him? Was it Mr. Pink? Was it, was his last name Pink?
I don't remember. I know he was a vet. Yes, Danny Pink.
Yes, that's right. And I think they did a really good job in that season of Doctor Who of having the doctor call him, like, his name is Mr. Pink. And any other show would have been like, oh, ha, 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 look, hee, hee, hee. But it's not played that way in Doctor Who. And they could have easily done that. And it's just a good example of not only the restraint they use with that, with both of those male characters, but also as the doctor, as a character, having that type of restraint and understanding. Because he didn't hate him for his last name. He hated him because he was a soldier.
Yeah. Yeah. So, sorry, I still have that giant pancake in my head from Uncle Buck with the shovel.
Yeah. There's only 2 scenes I remember from that movie. One, giant pancake snow shovel, and the other one, a duct tape boyfriend from the trunk of the car, which he then uses as a target to tee off golf balls.
Yeah, yes.
Oh, man.
Or like when he confronts the child's party clown at the front door. It's like, you've been drinking a little bit, buddy? And then the clown becomes confrontational. He knocks him out.
yeah. National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. A great scene. The attic scene. When he finds the old family videos. And he's just sitting up there reminiscing. And he just breaks down and has this really powerful, very emotional scene in this really funny comedy.
I wouldn't normally say that. What was it? Carl Griswold?
Yeah.
I wouldn't normally put him up as positive masculinity. I've got a lot of issues with him, but that scene, yeah.
That one scene.
It's there is something about when a character that is very, very flawed has a breakthrough.
Yes, and as you say, most of the time, he's an example of toxic masculinity.
He's an example of everything that's wrong and hashtag me too, you know?
And then, but you have that scene, and it's kind of how he realizes how he's been going about this whole Christmas thing completely wrong. And he's missed the point, right? And that's one thing, again, self-assessment. Mind you, he needed to be assisted in his self-assessment with old family videos.
Jen, do you have another one?
I don't.
Okay.
Okay.
I have another one.
Okay.
From one of my favorite shows from Futurama, Philip J. Fry.
Yeah.
Because the beauty of Philip J. Fry and his relationship with Leela is that every time he tries to do the stereotypical alpha dog male thing and he tries to do what he thinks Leela wants, it drives the two of them apart.
Yeah.
And that every time he is just himself, his fragile, frozen, thousand-year-old self, she falls in love with him again. And that, you know, there's one whole episode in the later seasons, you know, Just Take My Hand, where every time he tries to play the hero, it fails to the point of him losing his pants, you know, her losing an arm, the Mars crashing into the Earth, you know. It comically goes bad and worse and worse and worse every time he tries to be something that he is not.
Because he keeps trying to, like, rescue her.
Right.
Or help her.
And she
and
obviously
do all these tropes.
Does
yeah.
not need rescuing.
Yeah.
She is, you know, a hyper-competent, you know, combatant and a space captain and a bureaucrat and
she's
all
she's got
of these.
A laser on her arm.
Right. And, you know, a laser wrist thingy. And, you know, she's got all, you know, and she's been through so much adversity in her life. You know, she can surmount all of these obstacles. She doesn't need to be rescued. She just wants Fry. And anytime he tries to rescue her, it fails.
So in the end, he lets her rescue herself, and he gives her that respect and distance.
And at the end, both of them end up being rescued by the professor.
Oh. Okay, yeah, there's that.
Because the two of them have consigned themselves to yeah. their fate, and they live a beautiful entire life together, and then decide to do it all over again.
Oh, yeah, and that's a really sweet one.
Yeah, the end of that show is one of the most beautiful finales I've seen in a very long time.
Futurama has the best series finales.
Right,
they've done three
of them. And they've all been great.
And they've all been love yeah. stories.
Thank
between
you,
Leela
Fox.
And
oh, thank you, Fox.
So, before we close up, there was something that Greg was touching on. And it was, what do you do when you see, you know, if we want to emulate these positive examples, if we want to be like Fred Rogers, what do we do when we see the lack of positive masculinity, when we see people going the wrong way or doing the wrong thing? And there's always that nudge, nudge. You're in the boys' club. You understand. You know.
I'm gonna repeat the quote I said before. It's that you have to be the change you want to see in the world. So if you want a change to happen, lead it. And it doesn't take much. You don't need to be a billionaire. You don't need to be an influential media person. You don't need all the power in the world. You just need to change yourself.
Right.
And
that gets to the whole notion of, like, well, if I raise a stink, I'm going to get fired. So what do I do? And there's something that I said in a panel at Balticon last year. And it was, number one, make sure you're okay and you're safe. Number two, you can speak up if you need to, or as Texas, you make sure you're the positive example. And if you may not be able to change what someone else is doing, you can change what you're doing. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, and it doesn't need you to, you know, stand up on the hilltop and beat a giant drum. You don't need to do anything flamboyant. Just, hey, we're all going to go and do this thing. Hey, you guys go have fun and do that. I'm not. I'm going to stay back here and, you know, be socially conscious.
Or,
Or
you could take my example and tell the story of the most sexist thing you ever witnessed on a podcast so everybody can make fun of this douchebag.
Hey, I'm all about creating podcasts just because people are jerks.
You know, because here's the deal, guys. If you can't play a female character in a video game, just stop playing video games in general because you're terrible.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember mentioning that last time.
Yeah. But honestly, I know some people might take this the wrong way, but this happened. This actually happened earlier. I was playing Overwatch before we started the podcast. Me and Mariah were playing together, and we had a very toxic guy on the team. And he, for some reason, went in on her. Like, he just kept going after her with it. Oh, you're playing the character terrible, blah, 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 blah. And finally, I was, you know, I just was like, you know, you weren't playing your character wrong, right? Like, that dude was just a
burrito.
And so,
a donkey.
A donkey.
I could have said something worse. And I was just like, a large floppy burrito.
A taco.
And, you know, I was just like, sometimes you just have to take that moment and be like, ignore that. Like, that was, you know, you don't let that phase you because you did nothing wrong. You know, I had that same reaction with the girl who had to deal with that guy who was like, I'm bringing this game back. Why? Horizon Zero Dawn's like one of the best games on PS4 right now. I just can't play as a girl. And, you know, you have to, like, having to watch her smile and grin and bear that was just utterly painful. And you have sometimes you have to take that moment and be like, hey, sorry about that. I have to apologize for those members of my gender that are trash.
And, you know, sometimes that helps.
Yeah, I find it difficult to say of my, you know, my gender, mostly because I've seen it on both sides. And when I think about it, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, the women do that, too. Maybe for slightly different reasons, but it all shakes down that this person saw you online, saw you as somebody that needed to be corrected because of their version of the universe, and took it upon you and didn't care about you. I've had some instances of very much a moral questioning myself, like and the sad thing is I want to give some good examples, but it's one of those things that because of the positions I've held before, I was told things in confidence.
Yeah.
And so I can't. And I would love to, you know, give examples like, oh, this is really perfect, and this is really gonna like show you like how bad it really is. But it's a lot of the good old boys club that is difficult to go against. Mm-hmm. There are people that have like, oh, he wouldn't hurt a fly. And it's like, well, he did. Yeah. And he hurt my friend and I was there to witness it. And they're like, well, it's a he said, she said thing. No, it's so, definitely this thing happened. I had to rescue her. I witnessed it firsthand. And then there were some women who were present who were like, don't get me involved. Like that they're going to tear her down if she says anything. And at first she didn't. Finally, she spoke up and they were absolutely right. She was torn down, villainized. And now there are certain events I won't go to because of this.
Agreed. Yeah. And that's one of the ways that you deal with it. Right. I mean, yeah. if it's something that you're paying for or contributing to,
yeah.
You know, boycotting it is definitely an answer.
And I can't like say I'm boycotting it because of this, because after that whole debacle, she had said like, I just want to drop it. I just want to drop it. Obviously I've made enemies in the industry. I just want to drop it. And she's no longer working there. And so it hurt. It really hurt because I said like, well, I have this power. I can stand behind her and say, I saw my own eyes. I saw this thing happen where, you know, because she was a woman, this was a very uncomfortable situation. They're like, well, it wasn't anything illegal. And I'm like, that doesn't matter that it wasn't illegal. It's creepy and it's bad. And this guy has access to young girls and I don't think it's cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're like, well, you know, he wouldn't hurt a fly and you're obviously wrong or your eyes must've gone. And this is from like people who later complain. It's like, oh, it's really terrible for women out there. And I'm like, but you defended this guy.
You're part of the problem. This whole story reminds me. So when I looked up that quote, by the way, the Batman quote, you either die or you live to be the villain. Yeah. So that was actually created for the Dark Knight movie, actually. Okay. It's kind of a re-saying of a Nietzsche quote, which is like a paragraph long. I really thought it was from one of the books too. But as I was looking for it, there's this meme and the line is superimposed on Bill Cosby. And it's the same kind of a situation. The amount of people who are like, he would never, he was so supportive. He was so wonderful.
Oh, look at all these things that he did. And, you know, I think Bill Cosby is an excellent example of like how this whole thing is protected. And now it's difficult for me to listen to his comedy I grew up on. Mm-hmm. you know, like I like albums like I started as a child, and the best of Bill Cosby, and you know the Bill Cosby show we grew up to in the '70s, and we grew up to the Cosby show of the '80s.
Yep.
And he said some great things about the African American community that I think needed to be said, but because he said them, he could get away with it. Where somebody else said it, they're like, "Well, he doesn't speak for the black community." But he says, "Like, you know, fellas, the African American community is in trouble. You know, you got these saggy pants kids who are idolizing, you know, gangsters. There's something wrong." And a lot of people are like, "Yeah, you know, he's really right." He was printed on the. If those of you in D.C., Ben's Chili Bowl has this big mural of influential African American leaders. He was on it. And then the whole thing is like he'd been roofing people since the '60s.
Well, didn't he buy the rights to the Little Rascals for the whole purpose of never distributing it to make sure that that racist caricature was never brought back out?
Yeah,
dude, it's here's I'll go on my little soapbox about this because I've actually thought about this. It's there are certain black people who can and did speak for the black community.
Mm-hmm.
Oprah was one. Bill Cosby is another.
Yeah.
And Bill Cosby has done more for the black community in this century than I can think of. He has gotten so many African Americans through college. And I'm not talking about like.
So wait, when you say this century.
Last century.
Last century.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay.
And it's.
We're old.
I mean, I'm not talking about like, oh, they just got a 2-year scholarship. I'm talking about full on rides to school. Like, and he's done so much, but you cannot make excuses for him because of his philanthropy. Yep. It doesn't matter what good he did. The evil he did and continued to do still outweighs that.
Yeah.
And that's a thing that men don't do, but they do is make a lot of excuses for other men's behavior.
Yes, yeah. And I've been guilty of that myself.
And you're like, oh, well, you know, he was just joking, or it wasn't that serious. No, it was. And he wasn't joking. And most men know these things. Like, most men are, they may try to act like they don't know this or that they weren't, you know, aware of the intent of something, but they were. And in his case, you can't, it hurts. Like there's a lot of things that have happened to the black community that hurt, but his fall from grace has hurt tremendously.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you can't make an excuse for it. Like you have to own it.
And it's not like occasionally he said sexist things, which are, you know, sign of the times or whatever. This guy roofied women. Like, that has never been okay.
Yeah, he's not Red Fox or Paul Mooney or Richard Pryor.
It's not a joke meant for shock's sake. This was like full-on rape.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I think that there are some people who morality, they know that they do these things, so they buy friendship points or whatever to, like, you know, if they ever get caught, like, well, I did, you know, it's the Birdman of the Alcatraz type of syndrome.
It's like a carbon offset. Remember when bands were doing that? Oh, we're flying planes, but we're going to plant a bunch of trees, and that kind of, like, makes up for us polluting the environment. They think, like, oh, well, yeah, I'm doing these evil things, but I'm also doing all these good things, so that'll balance it out, right? No. Yeah.
So I walked a lady across the street, but then I totes groped her, so the two sort of cancel out, so I'm good.
Yeah. No. And there are some people, you know, in the preacher community that are covering up a lot of stuff you know, that, you know, say, well, I'm a man of God. And it's like, you should forgive him and blah, blah, blah. No, what he's doing is wrong.
And it's easy for us, like, when we find out that, say, a coach was doing it on a particular university team. And we go, oh, that's horrible. And then you realize how many people in fields where they're trusted. And that's where that's the big upset. It's like, we trusted you. And so you doing these wonderful things does not make it okay that you're hurting people.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you hit on a thing, Nutty, that a lot of men don't understand. Having grown up in a family that is majority women trust us. They may bust our you know whats and give us heck from time to time, but if they're in our lives, they trust us and they expect a certain understanding and handling of that trust. So you have to be careful not to violate or destroy that trust. It's a thing, like, maybe this is going to sound slightly toxic. You know, it's the job of a man to make sure you don't take the role a man is put in and use it to your advantage against the people who trust you.
I don't think that's toxic. Although I did say, you know, jobs of men, blah, blah, blah. But I think that's the role of pretty much a human. And I will agree with you on that one. So I'm going to say that's not toxic to expect, you know, accountability.
Yeah, because, you know, look, here, man, look, I'm 6'3", 300 plus pounds. At one point when I was in rather decent shape, I could bench press almost 400 pounds. I was squatting, you know, 500 pounds and leg pressing well over almost 2,000 pounds. Like, it would not have been hard to manhandle a lot of men or women. But handling that responsibility in the trust of others, like, you know what? I've been very angry. Tech understands this, you know, a lot. You get angry at people that work for you. You could easily just be like, I'm going to Aikido you into the dirt. But you don't.
Yeah, I was once beaten up by a bully when I was in grade school who was he was a black belt karate. I was hurt pretty bad, and he got, like, you know, slap on the wrist and all that in school. And the next Saturday, I'm at home, and he's there, and there's other people there. And I'm thinking, oh, they've come to finish the job. They've come to kill me. You're like 12 years old when this happened. And it turned out that it was him, his brother, his mom and dad, and his karate sensei. And he had to say to me with a red face, because he'd been crying for a while, that he had been stripped of all rank. He had had been knocked down back to white belt. He was going to have to earn all of his belts back. He had disrespected his sensei. He had disrespected his studio. And he's saying this, like, trying not to cry, because obviously they're like, you beat this kid up, and that is completely against the rules of karate. You're going to, like, lose all this rank, and you're going to face him and apologize to him in person. And I got a lot of respect for martial arts after that happened.
That's awesome.
We do.
Yeah. You know, but, you know, the whole Cobra Kai mentality. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think that there's a lot of people that have, I know a lot of people who know martial arts skill, they could easily, like, just destroy somebody, and they don't. Because luckily, most studios tell you that is, like, rule number one, do not do this. Yeah.
I've studied a couple martial arts. Tech, you've studied way more martial arts than I have. And pretty much every style, it's they're constantly teaching you how not to use it. You know, the idea is to diffuse situations. It's not about hurting people. It's about defending yourself.
Exactly.
You learn,
guy comes at you with a sword, just run the heck away.
Yeah. Well, you learn to defend yourself, and you learn to go on the offense, and you become such a capable person that what ends up happening is your filter changes.
Yeah.
And you realize that the situations where you need to use it become so much more extreme than what you thought of before. Yeah. And that what used to be a situation that would be aggressive where you'd need to defend yourself, now you look at it and go, do I really need to put somebody in hospital for this?
Yeah. Or you know, a lot could go wrong if I flip this guy in a crowded alley with a lot of sharp garbage, you know?
So why all of this because he stepped on my shoes, or all of this because we bumped into each other by accident? Is this really worth it? No. Oh, look, he's holding me at gunpoint and he wants my wallet. Well, time for someone to go to the hospital, and it won't be me.
Yeah, I think we were just talking about this at this party I'm at, that I like watching videos where street fights go wrong and stuff like that. That's probably something wrong with me. But, you know, I'm watching this thing, and the ones I really like are, like, the people that pick fights with martial artists who give them, like, 3-4 different chances to, like, you know, you don't want to do this. Like, I don't want to fight you. And the guy keeps going at him, and then they just do something, whatever it is. There was this one I recently saw where a guy twisted his arm in such a way that forced him to the ground. And he's holding his arm up behind his head in a twisted manner. And he's like, dude, like, did, like, I told you not to do this. Now I don't want to let you go. Do you have somebody who can take you home? Do you have a nurse that takes care of you? Do you have like a best friend who can get you home? And the guy's like swearing and all this stuff, but he can't get up. Those are the ones where the guys are calm and collected. And I'm like, this guy really has a control over his temper, which I think is another positive masculine aspect, to control your temper.
I have an affinity for videos where it looks like somebody's trying to take advantage of, generally it's a young lady or a younger guy, but you may have seen the video where this girl's on an elevator and she's got a bag, and the guy goes to race off, like,
steal the handbag, and she gives him a German suplex and just drops him onto his neck. I love that video.
Yeah. And then there's another one where it's a bunch of kids playing at like a lake, and there's a little dock, and there's this one chubby young lady, and she's throwing in food for the fish and the ducks, and this guy's like, I'm gonna knock her over, and he's pointing that he's gonna knock her over, and he goes to knock her over, and she just shifts, kneels, and he goes flying into the water, and it's perfect.
Roald Dahl, who wrote Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, mm-hmm. James and the Giant Peach, and Big Friendly Giant, a lot of other classics, used to say something in a lot of talks he gave. It's like, children love to see bad things happen to bad people. It's like this kind of morality play.
I am a child.
Yeah, and that's why I watch those videos. But it's to me, it gives me hope that somebody who has the kind of power to twist somebody by doesn't go Cobra Kai on somebody and says, you know, it's like, dude, I gave you the chances. I'm a bouncer of this bar, and you've hit me three times. And finally, after the fourth time, I'm like, you might end up hurting me eventually. So I'm going to hit you this once. And then the guy's like he suddenly becomes five times drunker. I don't know what he did to him, but he's like, oh, and his buddies are carrying him home and he can't hold himself up. And I'm like, okay, that's a guy who's like, you know what, I'm just gonna remove the problem without being like, you know, over like, oh, look at me, I killed a guy, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It's
that leads to Bohemian Rhapsody syndrome. So
exactly. So I want to thank you all for joining us. This has been a fantastic chat. I'm especially glad to have you, Grig, back, because I mean, getting Jen and Jason is a little easier because, well, they're awesome, and we're always chatting.
She just called us easy.
Yeah, you're easy.
Well, I have a kind of a busy schedule, convention wise, and writing and everything like that. But I'm always glad to come on if I get. And tonight just happened to work out because I just come back from a party.
Yeah, that was fantastic. And so I really was happy to have you back because you were on the original podcast. But I do want to have you come back and talk about, you know, just other things, because you're so much fun.
Thanks, Greg.
So can you tell people where they can, I don't know, buy your books or something on the internet?
You can go to griglarson.com. That's GRIGLARSON.com. Or you can go onto Amazon, look up Grig Larson. You can find the two books I currently have in publication. I'm working with a new publisher now, with Otter Libra, so there's going to be more stuff published in the future, and I'm very happy about that. And they're going to re-release my two older titles, plus some other stuff that I've done. You can see me, Libsyn. I write for This Kaiju Life, which is...
Who is
a guy who's an IT person in a place that researches giant monsters that stomp on cities, and hilarity ensues. They're very small podcasts. They only last about like 10 minutes each.
We're doing the promo at the end of the episode.
Excellent. We're doing a live version of it Sunday night at Balticon.
Excellent. And Jen, Jason, you want to tell people where they can find your podcast?
Come on, Jen, you can do this.
You can find us at talknerdytomepodcast.com.
Yeah. Come on.
Go.
That was good. That was good. That's all she needs, because all the links to everything else are right there. Tech, is there anything you want to plug?
No, you know where you can find me. I'm still not producing anything because I'm shiftless and lazy.
So we'll take your plug, and Shane has joined
upside
us.
Upside down or something. It was something upside down.
Yes, upside down and flying.ca. But Shane has joined us for the end of this, and wants us to know that the Retro Dwarf Introcast is back and recording next weekend. We keep telling people that. Hopefully it actually happens.
Is Red Dwarf streaming somewhere?
Because
it was somewhere. At one point.
Yeah, somewhere you can find it if you know how to look hard enough.
Yeah, yeah. I know that season 10 was on YouTube, and then season 11 was a little harder, so I bought it all from iTunes. But you can get it. You can buy them from iTunes for American audiences.
I know it was on Netflix at one point.
It was. I don't think it is for us. Is it for us anymore? I can't remember.
So. Red Dwarf X was good. Red Dwarf 11 was not so much.
Not as good, yeah. But thank you very much. And also, we want to thank the people that have made it so that this podcast gives you two shows a month instead of just one. And we want to thank our big daddy patrons first, starting with the top dog, Jason. Thank you so much. Thanks, next,
top dog by a dollar.
By a dollar. Next big daddy is Dave. Thank you so much. And Aaron Jackson, who is also our QA guy. He is awesome. Thank you so much, Aaron. But we also want to thank Susanna, Andy Luke, and you can find him on Patreon, by the way. He's got his own Patreon for his writing. Shane Poole of the Red Dwarf Introcast, which is back and recording next weekend. Beth Case, who just became Dr. Beth. The Radical Geek, thank you so much. Steve Pritchard, Rich the TT, Dagny, Mike of the Redacted Files, Ken Kennedy of Kenzoid's Autonomous Zone, Lynette McFadden of the Bicast, Aurora Lee, she also has a Patreon. You can find her on Patreon. She's a photographer. Susan, Melissa A. Bartell, the Bathtub Mermaid. She also has a podcast and writes a lot. Kinsey, Ian of the Web of Queer, Harold, Patrick Scafito. You can find him on Amazon, and often and usually Nick. Thank you all so much. Bye.
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 Hi. My name's Jim. J-I-M. An ordinary name. I'm an ordinary IT guy. But I work in a really interesting place. Information technology and giant monsters. This Kaiju Life. Look it up on Apple Podcasts or on the web at kaiju.libsyn.com.
Sorry, I have these auto lights back here from from my girlfriend's late husband, and he liked doing this sort of stuff, and fortunately I can't turn it off because it's part of the wall switch. So occasionally I go dark in here and I'll have to wave my arms like an idiot, turn the
Just as you're trying to say that, geez, why am I getting such a echo? Hang on one second.
Caller. Please turn down your radio.
Stop it. I don't know. Maybe that'll help. Sorry.
So
it was one of those sort of things. So but
while Grig flails his arm wildly to get the lights behind him to turn back on. there he goes.
Yeah.
Oh, which book is that? I own it.
I don't know. I want to say it's The Killing Joke, but I'm probably very wrong.
That might be it. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Nutty Bites is produced by Nimlas Studios under a Creative Commons Attribution No Commercial Non-Derivatives 3.0 International License. That means you can't change it without my permission. You can share it and send it to your friends. Just link back to me, my site, and everything. We live at nimlas.org, which has links to everything social media, including facebook.com/group/nuttybites and patreon.com/nukejoss, or call 347-Nutty42.